let's try and get started. I think we're going to make a couple. Let's run through quickly the 16.01, the bullying prevention, and maybe start by running through very quickly statutory requirements. As I remember when I looked at this for the administration of grants, do we have any money in it? And the grants come from gifts, grants, and donations?
Right, those come from Prop BB funds.
Yeah, there's no general fund appropriation or...
No, these come from the Prop BB funds.
So is there any money that's been donated in gift, grants, and donations?
No, there hasn't, but we do have a $2 million appropriation from the legislature through Prop BB.
Through the marijuana.
Correct.
Oh, well, good.
Good
deal. Perfect. Okay, so we have $2 million to distribute.
Correct.
What's the time frame on the rules?
We have 90 days from the receiving those funds, which began January 1st. So we have through the beginning of April to promulgate rules.
Yes, Dr. Forrest.
Couldn't we give $500,000 to the teacher... teacher evaluation? No, what is it?
Licensure fees.
Licensure fees. I mean, they seem to need a lot of work, and certainly we need teachers, and we need to get them out there if they're qualified.
I have a feeling the rules won't let us.
Why not?
Won't let us administer the grants, probably. Oh, shucks.
You are correct. You are correct that these are specified for a bully prevention grant program.
All right. And so when would you expect to award these?
So would it be all right with you, Mr. Durham, if I go ahead and introduce Dr. Scott Ross, who's going to be leading this program?
Sure.
We kind of launched right in, but I just wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity to meet a new staff member who's just recently joined us. He joins us from University of Utah. Prior to that, he's been a state-level director of response to intervention and positive behavioral intervention supports for Oregon. So he also has a research background in bully prevention, so we're really glad to have him at the department. So I'm going to hand this on over to him, if that's okay with you.
You bet.
Absolutely. And thank you, Mr.
Welcome.
Chair. Thank you, and board, and Dr. Osmond. If I can go back to your question, which I believe was, maybe you can rephrase it for me.
I just was looking for time frames.
Sure. On the slide here, we have you have four documents actually in front of you. One being these slides, two being House Bill 11-1254, which provides a statute around the bullying prevention grant program. Three, you have draft program rules, as well as, and four, you have the crosswalk between statute and those rules. Timeline. For the administration of this, we are in the notice of rulemaking this month, followed by the rulemaking hearing in February, rulemaking hearing in April, and our plan is to initiate the program after the rules have been approved. So April, May, June.
Okay. Go ahead and proceed.
Okay. And you have mentioned so much of this already. House Bill 11-1254 created a school bullying prevention program, grant program. That was actually during the legislative session in 2011. And on page 4, the State Board was instructed to promulgate rules for the administration of the program on or before April 1st, 2012, or not more than 90 days after the department received sufficient money to implement the program. Until recently, there wasn't any money in that program. With the passage of Proposition BB, there has been allocated $2 million to the program as of January 1st. And now we move forward with the promulgation of the rules. So at this point, I can take any questions you might have. You have the rules in your documents as well.
Yes, Dr. Flores.
I'm just learning. So there was no bully prevention before. So the monies that pay your position, say, and were there any monies that went along with the bullying prevention other than, say, those monies that we're now getting from the
You are correct. There were no monies to do a bullying prevention school program before January 1st.
So how can we allow this to happen? I mean, for them to put things on top of things without even... I'm sorry. It's very important. I know it's very important. But it's just that the legislature keeps on putting and writing bills and that do not attach monies that certainly are needed to pay for the services. And it's very important. I know it's very important. But so they passed these bills, but no money was allocated to them at all. That's sad.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Shuffle?
When we look at, I think you said, have you done this work in Utah?
I've done this bullying prevention work in particular. I've done it across the country.
So have you read the research of, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Seok-Yin Yong, J-E-O-N-G?
Is that a meta-analysis you're referring to?
He did a report in 2013 of 7,000 students from all 50 states from University of Texas at Arlington.
Okay.
Anyway, I just like to read the research behind these initiatives.
Sure.
And he thought the results would be predictable and would show that anti-bullying programs actually curb bullying. And instead he found the opposite. Now, Colorado is about to take $2 million and put in place anti-bullying. Based on the RFP, the way it's written, and the way the grantees are chosen, we will, I guess, follow what's out there in terms of how people intend to stop bullying. But what this gentleman found is that the way this is being thought of, configured, and funded really doesn't work. What might we do in Colorado that could render it effective as opposed to just doing what, I mean, you know, you look on the websites, there's a number of government sites that suggest evidence-based practices, and this researcher suggests it really doesn't work.
You bring up a terrific point and a terrific question. There are have been several what are called meta-analyses done on bullying prevention. This is one of them. In fact, there's over 10 that have been done, and all of them have shown mixed results, meaning some interventions have shown effects, other interventions have shown no effects, some interventions have actually shown negative effects, meaning more bullying after the program.
I've read them.
Yes, absolutely. There have been strong suggestions on what does work, and I think to answer your question, the key is to ensure that we don't do just anything, but we only do strategies or support strategies that we know will result in strong effects in schools.
And what is that? I mean, as I read the rules, I wasn't seeing anything unique that would suggest that it would work.
Yeah, absolutely. So, number one, we're going to the Colorado Department of Ed. My office will be creating a website, or has already created a website, where those strongest practices and evidence-based practices are listed. And in the application and in the rules, the draft rules at this point, the schools or districts or collaboration of schools and facility schools can choose from those strategies rather than just anything.
Yes, Ms. Masnick.
My question is, aside from the fact of whether it's actually effective or not, what are the parameters around the rules designing the program, the rules for the program, and how much flexibility do we have, or is this all governed by the procurement, or I mean the grant program rules? That I mean, it's already in statute. How much flexibility can we as a state board put into this?
I think we have a bit of flexibility with the
a
application.
Bit.
Well, there are certain things that need to be in the application.
Yeah.
However, there is some flexibility on what other components are in the application. So as an example, the schools or the applicants must indicate the practice or the evidence behind the practice that they want to implement. That's required.
That's one of the questions that I have, actually.
Sure.
This evidence-based practices, what exactly does that mean? I mean, does it mean that it's been used for a certain amount of time by a certain amount of school districts, whatever, and that's, quote, evidence-based, or there's peer-reviewed studies? What exactly constitutes evidence-based?
And that's another fantastic question, because there is a lot of different beliefs and different understandings of what evidence-based practice actually includes. What we argue evidence-based practice includes are actual peer-reviewed studies, and several of them, and what the What Works Clearinghouse indicates a certain number. Different organizations require different number of peer-reviewed studies that demonstrate that the intervention or program works in real settings. And those interventions can actually only be recommended in those settings for which they've demonstrated effects.
So that really limits us, though, doesn't it, in a way? I mean, not to say that every new idea is a good idea, but if it hasn't been used for a period of time, peer-reviewed, studied, et cetera, then that's not available to Colorado.
Correct. Now...
I would like to just indicate, though, that the board does have discretion around certain aspects here. For instance, in the definitions for the rules, we do have the opportunity to define what we mean by evidence-based practices. What you see here is guided by what's already kind of in statute around what we typically mean by evidence-based practices. The other piece, and I just wanted to go back to this around discretion for the board, is that within 11-1254, the board has the ability to, at a minimum, require particular aspects, which then would mean that the board can go up beyond the minimum, and it's at your discretion. And what you'll see in the rules that we have right here is based on kind of what the minimum is in statute.
Hmm. Yes.
No. My concern as we look at this initiative and the rules is just a huge pathway for privacy incursions as we attempt to regulate thought and language and define it in terms of bullying. And if you look at case studies in other states and even in other countries with respect to bullying and how it's defined and how these curricula are put in place and how the consequences are played out, there could be some fairly chilling outcomes, all in the name of something that most everybody would agree to, which is we don't want our kids going to school and getting bullied. And if that were all it was, we'd all be feeling wonderful about this. But when you look at how it's implemented and the incursions to privacy and the data gathering and the definitions and the subjectivity of the data around how people think, intonations of their voices, and all kinds of very subjective data points, whether somebody's, quote, bullying someone else, I really get concerned about an initiative like this in terms of subjectivity. So I hope that we can revisit the rules in depth and look at what we might do different in Colorado that other states are doing, which is not stopping bullying, in fact, making it worse.
One response to that, if I may. Bullying is already defined in statute for Colorado, and so the rules obviously would align with that definition. And districts already through 1254 are required to kind of track incidents of bullying. So what this would do would not be instituting something that districts aren't already doing. Instead, it would, on a volunteer basis, allow some districts to have some funds to institute a bullying prevention program. But your point
defined?
Is
it defined in the document?
Yeah, it is. It's at the end of your document. And I can read that for you if you'd like.
Would you?
It means any written or verbal expression or physical or electronic or act or gesture or pattern thereof that is intended to coerce, intimidate, or cause any physical, mental, or emotional harm to any student. Bullying is prohibited against any student for any reason, including but not limited to any such behavior that is directed toward a student on the basis of his or her academic performance, or against whom federal and state laws prohibit discrimination upon any of the bases described And
I mean, can you see the subjectivity there? That's
absolutely
incredibly pervasive. I mean, yeah. If we applied bullying to the behavior even of our board, we could probably identify instances of bullying. Someone's emotional stability or feeling good after they leave the meeting because of the intonation of someone's voice or the choice of a vocabulary word might indicate. I mean, I think that we have to be very attentive to the detail of how this is implemented in Colorado if we really want to see anything good come of it.
I think you're absolutely right, and your concern about the definition of bullying is completely valid.
Very pervasive.
Yes,
subjective.
Yes, and it is a big issue defining it objectively, because even the definition itself, which was originally written in the 70s, was never actually researched to begin with.
Right.
So we actually have a definition that several folks have challenged in recent years.
And so is that definition in our statute? Where is that
definition? Yes, that definition is, you can find it at the end of that House Bill 11, 12, 15.
What about the victim? I mean, what should the victim do? Are there any strategies for victim, like punching? Maybe not punching back.
That's a good strategy.
That's the problem. They can't punch anymore.
You can't punch anybody, you know, even though
that's
you want to.
That used to be an effective way to end the
bullying. That's right. But we, I think there should be some strategies for the victim to maybe feel better. As opposed to going home and...
Ms. Rankin?
Absolutely. The subjectivity of the whole thing, I know you've heard all this before, but it's students and it's surveys that they fill out, and maybe they never even thought of something until they read it in a survey, and then you've got another variable there. And then the word that on the... page 2 that really gets me is how frequently the student perceives that he is a victim of bullying. Perception, it's another level of that. That these are very concerning to me. The other thing that maybe you can answer this, $2 million from BB, is that a one-time? Is it flexible? Depending how much marijuana, are we going to get more money? How does that work?
It's anticipated to be an ongoing appropriation,
okay.
And the legislature will be clarifying that during the session.
And do we see this, since you have the experience with it, and thank you for bringing that to the table, as pilot programs or looking at this and going in one direction? And if you see that, hey, this is where I've seen this before, let's change tax here, you're in that flexibility for our state?
If I understand your question right, if we can... keep schools accountable for doing it well, and if they're not doing well, we can change directions quickly. Is that what you're
especially
asking?
As Dr. Schroeder or Scheffel said, you know, sometimes it makes it worse. We certainly don't want to go down that path in even one school.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and one of the requirements that we have written into the rules or into the application is that they will have to report to us yearly on not only the student outcomes of their intervention efforts, but also their implementation fidelity, meaning their implementation, how well they're actually doing the work. Because what we find is that a bad program results in bad outcomes. A good program that's done badly results in bad outcomes as well. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question the short way, yes, we will be keeping a very close eye on the results of efforts.
Yes, please proceed.
Do you have an idea in your mind how you want to do this?
Yes, I do. We have already begun, or the website is under revision, but it has been developed since that 2011 legislation.
What do you feel about that since you're new?
The website itself?
Mm-hmm, and what it may say and how that fits into what you plan to do.
It is, we have high expectations for the clarity of the website and for the opportunities that it produces or presents for folks. You're absolutely right. We have to keep a close eye because there is the possibility of negative results. And so we are taking it very seriously to not just spread the money around and say do whatever feels good, but rather we need to really keep a close eye on measurement of outcomes.
Ms. Masney.
I think one of the things that we, you know, I understand that what we're doing is we're creating rules for a grant program that schools will then apply for. But this is something I think we already see happening in some schools in an effort to make sure that kids are safe. Bullying. Kids are being labeled as criminals or getting into a lot of trouble for behavior that when you and I were in school would, well, okay, I was in school a long time before some of you. But we would be sent to the principal's office or, you know, a teacher would discuss with us that that was inappropriate. And unfortunately, in many cases these days, there's no room for judgment. The children are just labeled. Mm-hmm. And so then you have a victim, perhaps, and you have just made another victim. And so I'm very concerned for all the reasons we've all discussed. And so my ask is that we look for ways to make this as light a touch as possible. And I think we should put this off.
Doctor.
What time is it?
Dr. Shovel, it's late. It's almost 5 o'clock.
So, yeah, I would agree as we can think about this in greater detail. I was just looking at the definition. This language, bullying is prohibited against any student for any reason, including but not limited to, and so forth. Prohibited against any student for any reason. Prohibited. Does that mean, what does that mean?
So I think that perhaps
Mr. Dill is ignoring you.
I think Mr. Dill may want to respond to that.
The pervasiveness of it, mm-hmm. written or verbal expression, or physical, or electronic actor, or gesture, or pattern, intended, and it could be almost anything, and it's prohibited, meaning that, what?
Yeah.
The definition, I think, if somebody feels offended, that's probably good enough.
Perceived, yes.
I mean,
yeah, they perceive they're offended.
I mean, does the board... When we try to write rules for this, is it helpful if we try to define this further to avoid
yes.
such pervasive blanket anything that anybody's offended by?
Mr. Chair, in listening to this discussion, and unfortunately I haven't been asked to review these, and mm-hmm. taking a look at this, of course, the problem is if you write a standard that is inherently subjective, there's really no way to judge, you know. And I'm wondering if for purposes of the rules, if we can't reframe this in terms of what a reasonable man would consider to be bullying, or to be considered to be coercive or intimidation, to attempt to sort of import from. You know, really, from the English common law, an objective standard into here. I was reminded of a very, very old case we studied that gave us the reasonable man standard. It had to do with a man whose attorney came up with a wonderful defense. He said he was too stupid to realize what was going to happen, so he shouldn't be culpable. He had no idea. And they said, "Well, no, that's not a workable legal standard, but a reasonable man standard is." So I wonder if there's a way that we can rework the language here to sort of import that concept into the rules.
Yeah, I'd like a deep look from a legal perspective of what we can do to create some rails here so that this isn't a blanket invitation to create, as you said, almost a criminalizing of what it happens to be from kind of normal kid behavior in some respects. Not that bullying is that, but I'm just saying... It's so subjective. So what kind of parameters can we build around it to avoid a blanket atmosphere of fear?
So I don't disagree with what you're saying, but this is not going to identify bullies. This is to apply for a grant, I hope. So that's we're not setting the rules for identifying who's a bully and who isn't.
But the schools will do that based on the money.
That's right.
So as a point of clarification, right now also in House Bill 11-1254, in addition to creating a grant program, there were additional requirements called the Safe School Reporting Requirements. And so districts are already required to report this type of information as part of their compliance with this. Bullying behavior is not called out specifically within that reporting. It's part of a larger reporting about behavior that's detrimental to the welfare or safety of other students or staff. So I just wanted to clarify that this is something that's already taking place in school districts. The other point of clarification as well, and perhaps Mr. Dill might be able to help us a little bit with this, the State Board, according to the statute, needs to adopt rules within 90 days of receiving funding. So by noticing rulemaking today, just voting to notice rulemaking, I believe we would still have the opportunity to address some of the board's concerns with these draft rules and bring forward either answers to some questions that you might have here specific to the definition of bullying, as well as see if there's some other things that we can do to address some of the board's concerns and bring that forward. It wouldn't be in the February meeting. This would be in the March meeting when we would actually have the hearing. That would give us a little bit of time to perhaps meet with some board members if you have some questions and incorporate some of those changes for the actual hearing. But I needed to defer to Mr. Dill if this is if my understanding is accurate.
I think that is accurate. By noticing the rulemaking, you're just really beginning the process. It doesn't commit you to pass anything that is in the original notice. It's all subject to amendment, preferably after you receive comment.
Well, why don't we do it this way? Whether we notice it this month or next, I don't think it makes too much difference. If we're uncomfortable with this as a starting point, maybe we can talk to staff and go back and start someplace else. I think a couple of questions I'd like to see a couple sample reports that districts are submitting, mm-hmm. So what they think bullying is and what's going on currently might give us some idea of whether we can conclude that we believe they're acting in a reasonable man standard or whether the districts are already out of hand with some of these filings. And we could perhaps take that information, look at it in the next meeting. You could see if you can incorporate some of that. Also, I'd like to know definitively, when you say you expect this to be an ongoing appropriation, given how short the budget is this year, the idea of putting $2 million a year into this to essentially apparently study it is the legislature may want to see whether they want to do that in perpetuity or not. And finally, I'd like to know definitively how you do this without significant privacy considerations. If you start surveying kids, which I presume is the methodology, you certainly can't do it by computer and ensure any level of privacy. So I presume it's going to be all paper and pencil, and that would be a grant requirement to make sure that somehow you've protected the privacy of the answerers. So there are a whole number of considerations that need to go into this. I didn't see any privacy issues or carve outs in the rules. So you need to start there when you're writing the rules about how you ensure student privacy. One of them is you keep this kind of data out of electronic distribution. So I think you got a long way to go before we notice it. And, we try hard to meet legislative deadlines, and we'll try.
Mr. Chair, can I mention one thing on this? Just so you're aware, I do think we do have a legislative deadline that will push that. We could potentially do emergency rules if you wanted to be in compliance. But just know that if you make the decision, we'll probably be out of compliance with when the rules need to be noticed, just so you're aware.
Okay. All right. Well, does anybody want to make a motion? We'll go ahead and vote on it. That's helpful. Yes, Dr. Schroeder.
I move to approve the notice of rulemaking for the school bullying prevention and education grant program pursuant to section 22-93-102 CLS.
Okay. Is there a second to that motion? Ms. Goff, seconds. Would you call the rolls? Roll, please, Ms. Birdsall.
Board Member Flores?
Aye.
Board Member Goff?
Aye.
Board Member Mazanek?
No.
Board Member Rankin?
No.
Board Member Scheffel?
No.
Board Member Schroeder?
Yes.
Chairman Durham?
No. That motion is defeated by a vote of 4-3. All right, we'll move on to, let's see, I think probably we're going to start proceeding out of order. Why don't we do public comment, because I think we're running late for that, and then we'll make a decision on what we absolutely, if anything, have to get done today, and we can't carry on for tomorrow. So during public comment, I may confer with Dr. Asp about some of these issues. Two people signed up to testify. Bruce, would you like to join us? Coy, Mr. Coy, thank you. I've not seen that printed before. Thank you.
I thought it was Ka.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, and Dr. Asp, thank you for listening to a brief public comment, and I assure you it will be brief. I just wanted to explain a little bit about the Colorado Association of School Executives protest about the ACT-SAT decision that was made recently. I'm the executive director of CASE, and upon the decision that was made on December 23rd and announced by the department, there was an incredible hue and cry from within our membership. And I think that I represented that well in a protest that was subsequently found not to have standing in the official procurement process. And I would have appreciated a notification about that, by the way, not reading about it in Chalkbeat, but it was something that occurred. And I just want to highlight one aspect of what we said, and that is, and this comes directly from Lisa Escarcega, who's the Chief Accountability and Research Officer for Aurora Public Schools. And she said to me, "Students deserve optimum conditions for high-stakes testing, especially for a college entrance exam. These testing conditions include adequate time to prepare and practice the assessment format, test administrators that are thoroughly trained to give the assessment, and data systems set up and ready to accurately pull the student information necessary." When we read about this decision on December 23rd for a spring 2016 implementation, her conclusion was, under the current proposed timeline for the first ACT administration, these conditions for testing cannot be met. It was seen as an impractical decision, mostly due to the timing of it. We just wanted to highlight that, and I think that now I'd like to be able to say to Dr. Asp and his team, thank you for working on a compromise. I think that's going to make a big difference this year. There are some questions that remain, and I think that our members will be asking them. In fact, I was at the East Central BOCES meeting this morning talking to about 20 superintendents there, and I just asked, well, what do you think? Are you okay with this test decision and how it was made? There's a split out there. There are some districts that are feeling okay about moving with this delayed timeline into this new framework. And there are some that feel very, very strongly that this is going to be a difficult hurdle, especially at a time when funding and resources is so tight for schools. I had probably about 40 or 50 emails after I sent a briefcase out yesterday and asked for a response from our members. And one of the responses was from a school principal in Meeker, and I think that Pat Sandals will refer to that, but also from the superintendent. And what Superintendent Criselli said was, we have reached a threshold for change in Colorado that is going to create real pushback. And I think my suggestion would be going forward, we really work collaboratively with the field to make sure that we can do the best we can for those kids who deserve optimum conditions to take those tests. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coy. I think usually we don't respond to public comment, but I think this is particularly important. And you certainly had every right to protest, but I think when I saw that you had, I concluded you didn't have standing to do it. And I'm not a lawyer, but I play one on television occasionally. I think that your complaints were well founded with the timing, and I think Dr. Asman's staff really. I didn't think they were going to be able to correct this problem, and they at least corrected it for this year. But the legislature, I would hope you would visit with the legislature about this matter. I think that they knowingly or otherwise created a problem and didn't fully appreciate the nature of their acts. And I would hope you would go over there and make sure that, and if you want the whole issue revisited, I mean, we can't do it here, so it needs to be done over there, and I would encourage you, and I suspect you won't be shy about letting them know about the long-term consequences. So I would, I think the board by and large agreed with your analysis, and we're pleased that we got some result that helps us in the short run, and then the legislature needs to sort out what they really intend to do for the long term.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Pat Sandoz.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
It is evening.
Commissioner Asp, board members, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Pat Sandoz. I'm the president of Colorado Association of Secondary School Principals and also a member of CASE, and CASP is a suborganization of CASE, so I wanted to let you know that. I'd like to share today what is by no means a comprehensive list of concerns with the SAT and ACT process and the decision-making. I'd like to first thank the committee, by the way, for taking the time and making the effort to work on that decision. I know it's not an easy decision, and I really do respect their time and effort in doing that. I have a great deal of respect for them for doing that. So I wanted to say that. That was the committee who actually made that decision. However, we have great concern about the committee representation. I noticed in an earlier presentation there were no less than four high school representatives, high school principals, represented on that smaller committee that dealt with a much smaller issue. As far as I'm aware, there were no comprehensive high school principals on the committee. I do think that's a big concern when you're asking folks who really have to be on the front lines and administer that assessment. There should be representation there. Those folks should be part of that decision-making process. I'm puzzled as to why the main group was not there. I think I've heard plenty of concerns from colleagues about the timelines and the quick turnaround with no feedback. I need to tell you there's a great deal of discomfort and angst from parents and from school administrators in regards to how this process unfolds in the future. Dr. Asp, I do have to say thank you. I think you alleviated a lot of that stress right away in looking for a solution, a temporary solution, but I do think we have to find a permanent solution that really does make sense for kids, first and foremost, and that is an actionable process that we can follow. Because high school principals have such a strong responsibility in that, they're the folks who are going to take the majority of calls from upset parents, from parents who spent a great deal of money and time and effort over the years preparing their kids for the ACT. We're not taking a position on which ACT, SAT, which should be the test of choice, but we need to make sure that we do this in a process that they have an opportunity to talk. A little worried about that red sign over there.
25 seconds.
Well, okay. Many high school principals express concerns about the potential for opt-outs, which really does damage their ability to measure longitudinally what they can do with that. If kids start taking that opt-out choice and start taking one of the other assessments, the college readiness assessments, I think it can really impact how we look at 191 and how we really look at how our teachers can demonstrate growth. Okay.
Go ahead and finish.
Okay. Thank you. I mentioned the great deal of time. I think there's some concern from some principals have reached out and asked me about the science component. What does that look like? Are we going to have to give a separate science assessment? Is it something that's going to be negotiated in the new piece? And I think the other question they have, which is a good question, is how does ESSA impact this decision-making? Because we know with the new guidance that will come out, we're going to have much more say in our schools or districts going to have the opportunity to make some determination on that. So is this really a moot point? I think those are some of the things. I appreciate you taking the time and listening. I didn't get a chance to share the principal from Meeker's statement. If I can do that just really quickly, I appreciate it. She says, in response, our rural community, ACT, is very important. Most of our students who go to college go to public schools which accept the ACT. We've had very few students take the SAT in my 5 years here. The ACT was the only test that did not create controversy in our community. Last year, we had a high opt-out rate for the PARC test at the high school, and generally speaking, our parents were not very fond of standardized tests, except the ACT. We have never had a problem getting students and parents to buy in. As a matter of fact, as a school, we wrote most of our measures of student learning around ACT, and we recently dropped NWEA MAP testing and added ACT Aspire. Teachers who wrote their individual MSLs based on growth on the ACT Aspire. We've been training our freshmen and sophomores to take the ACT. Needless to say, this change has changed everything, the entire direction of the school. So, honestly, we don't know what direction we're going, and we're frustrated. So that was her comment in her note to me. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, yes. Let's proceed, if we can, see how much of this we can knock out. 1602, Kindergarten School Readiness Reporting System. The next item is the consideration of the School Readiness Reporting System. And let's see, Commissioner, do we have staff for a quick overview?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. As you recall, we had a presentation at the last board meeting, and in between that, we met with several board members also to clarify some questions and make sure that you were clear on what the data elements were that were to be collected. I'll turn this over to Dr. Melissa Colesman just to give a brief overview and then see what questions you still have.
Great. So thank you. Yes, we'll make this as brief as you like. As Dr. Ast has indicated, we met with several board members between the last board meeting and this meeting. Our purpose today is to provide the board with a recommendation for the kindergarten school readiness reporting system. And we have that recommendation spelled out on the third slide of your handouts, which is that CDE will utilize the existing state reporting system data pipeline to report just the statutorily required minimum information regarding kindergarten school readiness, and we articulate what those areas are, and we stipulate that the department will not collect any information beyond what's necessary to produce the reports and strictly to adhere to all data privacy and security legal requirements. As a follow-up then, between our last conversation in December and today, just wanted to clarify one piece. The board chairman asked a question about what the timeline was for when the board would need to act on this. I indicated that there wasn't a particular timeline that the board needed to adhere to. I did want to clarify, however, that the department has a responsibility to begin reporting on kindergarten school readiness actually in February of 2014. So we're out of compliance with that. So just wanted to make you aware of that.
Lyons is a state of mind. Yeah.
The other piece was we were able to meet with Dr. Flores and Dr. Shuffle back in December to go over some specific questions that the board members had about the data elements and wanted to dig in and understand that a little bit more. We were able to present to them what forms EDAC actually receives when they approve a particular collection, and we were able to look at a kind of a sample of what would districts submit in terms of these minimal areas. Some recurring questions have been around the area of social-emotional development, and we've discussed that here. I know that you've received questions from the public. I just wanted to clarify a couple of options around that. I think Dr. Shuffle had asked, might there be some different ways that we think about that piece, because there's concerns about some sensitivity around that information. recognizing that social-emotional development is not akin to a psychological profile. Instead, it really is just looking at the skills that kids need to be successful in a classroom setting. Kind of with that caveat, we did bring forward that question to EDAC at their last meeting and asked, are there some different ways that we might ask districts to report that? One of the things that EDAC said is if you ask us to do something different for one of the indicators, it makes it hard. It increases the burden because they can't just use one system. They have to use a different system. So as we try to generate some other ways of thinking about that in response to your question, the board could ask the department to think about how we use that data or what we do with that data after we receive it. And we've kind of come up with a couple of options that that you might want to consider. First, the board may instruct the department to remove some of the school readiness information from our data warehouse at a particular point in time. That point in time could be as early as, like, for instance, third grade, where we would say that after third grade, we would remove that information. Keeping it to third grade, why we picked that would be it would enable the board to look at any relationship that there is between kindergarten school readiness information and academic achievement as measured at third grade. So that could provide the board some information about making some policy decisions around the utility of the kindergarten school readiness initiative and take a look at whether, and we as a state could look at whether or not that information is useful. The other option could be that the board could instruct the department to only keep that data long enough to produce our required reports. So I don't know that that fully gets at I'm looking to Dr. Shuffle because this was a concern that you had raised, and you'd asked that we kind of generate some options around that. But I wanted to just present that as an opportunity for the board to consider.
Yes, Dr. Shuffle.
Yeah, thanks for taking time to meet with myself and Dr. Flores and others. So my question is this. I reread the statute, right? So it says the purpose of the statute is to look at readiness. Then it specifies areas or domains that need to be assessed. TS Gold assesses these multiple areas of social, emotional, language, cognition, and so forth. But it doesn't say that we have to report the data as scores. It says that we're supposed to produce a report, tell me if I'm wrong, that says this is the number of students or the percentage of students that are, quote, ready. So is there any way to render the score a dichotomous yes or no with a certain level of confidence, like confidence score almost. Leave it at that. That way you get rid of the score itself and the descriptors beneath the score, which that's where the privacy issues enter in. And many would say that preschoolers being identified with cognition scores, I mean, those scores change a lot as kids get older. Mm-hmm. So parents, because of the privacy issue, don't like all this data being collected in such specificity. And we know there's, I can't remember how many data points there were, but a lot. And that's the problem. So, I mean, as we look at the statute, what we're trying to report is readiness. How many kids are ready in these types of settings? So let's say they give the TS goal. We ask the vendor to align with the privacy requirements. And they don't report the scores to us. They take the data, use a dichotomous decision-making process, with perhaps a confidence level, and that's it. I mean, is there any way to think about this to address this problem with our youngest kids? We care about readiness, but we don't care about all this data. We shouldn't care about it.
Yes, Dr. Sure.
We've talked about this before.
I know. I just can't never figure
right.
out.
And
how
we were, and one of the things, and I've been thinking about this myself because we were talking about not dichotomous, but trichotomous. Is that possible?
Ready, sort of ready.
And there are a couple of things we care about. One of the things we care about is whether there's improvement over time in school readiness. We are making huge investments in early childhood. We are trying to help parents help kids be ready for school. And we want to see if there is change. So what do we need? What information do we need in order to be able to see that? I'm pretty interested in picking a time to delete the materials, and I would say that we don't actually assess kids in anything but reading until fourth grade, and I'm going to get back on my favorite horse. which is that early childhood math development is huge, and we're not paying attention to it. And yet the research shows that by 12th grade, it makes there's some real strong data that by 12th grade, you can almost make some predictions about success for students. So I want to be very careful about
12 years.
12th grade, that early reading is not as predictive of success in school by the end of school as is early math skills. It's weird, I'll admit, but that's what some of the research is showing. And so I want to not cut off. I mean, I tend to agree with Deb that we probably should delete some of the data, but we need to think about what are the questions we want to answer over time. One, are kids more and more ready? Two, what does that readiness suggest to us by fourth grade, which is such a such an important year for students' success, and that's when we actually start doing some of the more detailed assessments on students. So I was actually surprised to see that we'd settled on actual scores, because I was trying to figure out if we had four, which is not ready, almost ready, ready, mm-hmm. and, I don't know, bluebird. Trying to figure out where those things cut off, even, is a whole lot more difficult than just popping in the score, agreeing to get to eliminate, especially, I mean, I'm not as upset about if the social and emotional development piece is uncomfortable for some people, drop that one earlier. But certainly the ones that are language comprehension, general mathematics knowledge, those are things that can really help us move forward in changing how we prepare kids for school. And I hate to lose that information. I don't know a better way than the raw score, simply because in terms of those four different, you know, do you use three, do you use four, do you use five, right? For teacher evaluation, we've got five different things. And then you try to figure out what's the cutoff, and you kind of make yourself nuts.
Well,
yes, Dr. Shepard.
Well, maybe this is a question for Tony. Based on what the law says, and then we can decide if we even want to do this. I would like to see it done. Can we, if the goal of this legislation is to answer the are the kids ready or not, can we not report scores? I mean, we have to test the kids in these areas. Can the schools take the data and make a decision about ready or not ready or partly ready? And can we use that? I mean, why do we have to get these scores at the state level when we know there are huge privacy issues? And I hear what you're saying about decision-making for the efficacy of preschools, but I guess I'd like the students and the parents' needs to trump the needs of the state right now because of the vulnerability of the kids and their age. And I just wonder if
what are they vulnerable
do we
to?
Have to have these scores.
What are they vulnerable to?
I'm privacy issues.
What do they care?
What do they care? You mean the children?
I mean,
what's
going to happen to the kids? I don't get it. I actually don't get it.
Well, they might be exploited.
Yeah. How?
The statute says that it has to be suitable for measuring students' levels of school readiness. But
okay. So that's the test.
That's the test. It doesn't indicate what format those measures would necessarily have to be.
Be reported.
That's not. Yeah, it's not that prescriptive.
Yeah, so I know what you're saying is we've discussed it before. I agree. I keep pushing on. I don't want the state to gather this information in this level of detail. I don't think we need it. I don't think the statute requires it. And I'd like to see a different approach to this kindergarten readiness database than what's currently being envisioned. And as I read the statute, too, I don't think we have to do this level of detail. So that's my only point. I don't know what other board members think. But in the name of privacy... and young children and a host of information, when you actually read the descriptors on the test, it's very intrusive.
I'm not suggesting that you report the score on every single question. Either that or I'm misunderstanding it. These are aggregated scores in the five different areas. They are not the individual, right?
Well, the database has responses to the actual questions. And that's not what's being said.
So to clarify that, Dr. Shuffle, districts have their own contracts with whatever assessment publisher that they're using. What we would be asking is that districts would report that aggregate score for each domain. We did ask EDAC whether or not it would be acceptable, how it would work from a an implementation standpoint to indicate either yes or no ready in each of those areas, or what it would take to say kind of exceeding, meeting, or not yet meeting age expectations. The feedback that we received from EDAC was that requires additional step and burden and programming to be able to say here's the score, and then we have to program it to translate it to one whatever reporting category. They're not saying that they couldn't do that. They're just saying that it does require an additional burden. And they have been our they serve as an advisory council for us as a department about how we go about collections. So I just wanted you to know kind of what their response was to that. It's not impossible, but it just requires a little bit of a burden.
Different fields than what we have.
Correct. And the other consideration from a data standpoint is whether or not it increases the opportunity for errors in terms of what how those scores can be reported. So, for instance, human error enters into it when you start to translate, like, okay, this score equals this rating. We could end up, human error could attribute the wrong, you know, level of readiness for particular kids, and it could go undetected, and so that's just a drawback. But again, this is obviously a consideration for the board.
So, any other comments? Let me just ask a quick question. I mean, first of all, I think this slide is very helpful. I'd like to see this every time we're collecting any kind of data. This really lays it out. And really, you have about, I think you have probably two items, perhaps three, where there's some serious privacy consideration, because otherwise a math score and a date of birth and all that, you're going to have all that to, then you have to, it's data you have to protect, but I don't think it's something to be carried with through to a student for his life. And that's the concern, is that this data never goes away and somebody, you know, when they're hiring, goes back and is able to look at those records. That's the concern. So is it possible, if you have the social and emotional data, if you have one score, and I remember, because the thing that bothered me about those items were the things that they don't, that obviously society doesn't value anymore. It doesn't value leadership, doesn't value initiative, doesn't value self-reliance, because none of those things are interested. It's how well you work with others and what I would call softer skills. So if those were just all aggregated and you get one number, and I don't care what the number, how many, one of five, one of ten, and that's the number reported for social emotional development, and you're not going into all the breakdowns, can you do that, and does that solve your problem? Mm-hmm. Because I think just one score on social emotional development doesn't have a serious impact on somebody's future mm-hmm. At kindergarten. So if that's the only thing that's scored mm-hmm. there as opposed to, you know, potential axe murderer, then I think we can.
Every 5 year old is.
So, I had a counselor tell me about one of my eighth graders who predicted that, actually, but it's a different issue.
We are getting punchy, folks.
Yeah. So, you know, cognition. I mean, if it's on single scores, then I mm-hmm. think we might be able to. At least I can certainly work with that, and I don't think you're getting into too much detail. Yeah.
So, Mr. Chairman, that's precisely
exactly
what this would indicate.
It'd
be
exactly
a single.
What you're
it's
do.
Precisely one single score for each of those areas.
And that's all you're going to collect.
that would be all.
So what do you, Dr. Shuffle? What do you think?
Well, it doesn't satisfy my need.
Okay.
All right. This is all PII data, and you've got scores on each of these dimensions, and anybody can look up what those dimensions stand for in terms of the questions, and they exist at the district. And as you point out, they each have separate vendor contracts, so they can. The data exists in detail, right? You're saying you're collecting the aggregate score, but we don't need to do that, as I understand it. We could be talking about readiness without doing this. At the very least, we should have a very specific guideline as to making the data go away as soon as mm-hmm. the requirements met, and then I would object to this kind of a database for young kids because it's PII data and it's still intrusive with respect to these dimensions. And we don't need it to answer the readiness question. Restraint
in
government.
But we do need it to ultimately serve kids and improve the system. And that's the reason. Yeah, we do.
Have the data.
Put it in a folder.
The schools are doing what they're doing in terms of readiness to address the instructional needs of the kids. The state isn't going to do anything.
We as a society are investing huge resources in serving our early kids.
And we can answer.
And to the extent that we can answer the question that our kids are readier than they are today, especially special populations,
we can
say this is worth it. And to the extent that there's no change and there's no improvement, or worse yet, there's actually a diminish. For example, so we're hearing from some studies that sending kids to preschool actually messes them up. That's and they're not as socially and emotionally ready for second grade. These are things we should know in order to self-correct, and we cannot self-correct in a vacuum. And so I would agree that the specific scores on specific questions are unnecessary, but because when we need that information, somebody can dig deeper. But in general, to have some general data over time to be able to see changes or to be able to see that kids who are at a certain level in terms of readiness by fourth grade are really doing well or doing poorly in math scores, that might actually help us figure out where we should be presenting what kind of information for kids, what kind of strategy should we be.
I disagree, but I hear you.
Okay. Yes. The harm I absolutely do not get. I wish somebody could give me an example of the harm that my grandson's going to have.
We could go back and read the items on the assessment. I mean, we did that before.
I'm talking about this aggregate. This aggregate stuff. The harm that can come to my grandson because he gets a score of 2 or 30 on any one of these, I don't understand. And if somebody can give me an example, I would be really grateful because I don't get it.
I think these companies want to have that information.
This is about
in order to sell
this isn't the
programs, curricula, and stuff.
You're right about that. You're absolutely right about that. But that's not what this is.
Yeah, but
this isn't going to companies. The companies are the companies have whatever they have.
Let's say your grandchild gets a mallet and goes and hits another kid in the head.
A possibility.
No, a big possibility. It happens. Little kids do that all the time.
So what does that have to do with collecting this information? I don't. How does that show up, by the way, on here? There's nothing on here that talks about mallets or my grandson hitting anybody.
Well, but it's part of it. Are they ready socially? Are they?
The discipline is when you get.
You know, and little kids are amoral. I mean, I've said this before, and we teach them how to be
moral.
And
that's what we should be
doing.
Should be improving over time. And I'm not interested in specific questions.
Into the bullying, too. I think we should teach them right from wrong.
Deb, do you have an example of what's going to happen to my grandson? When we report these aggregate scores. To the department.
Because I don't think it is just the aggregate scores. I don't trust that that's all that happens.
But that's all the district's going to send to us.
It's more than what we need to do. I guess I believe in looking at statute, doing what we need to do, and if we do more than what we do, we're overreaching what is necessary. We're trying to answer a readiness question for state data purposes.
Why are we
trying to work with kids to help them get ready. Right. They're looking at those dimensions. That's been done for years in preschools and kindergartens. I don't like the idea of sending that data to the state unless we have to, because we don't need to.
Why did the legislature do this?
That's a longer discussion.
They're trying to find correlations.
Well, they're hoping to find some ways to improve, isn't it? Isn't that why we're doing it? Why they have all these changes? Are occurring?
I just
we
don't
get
think
better
it's not the role of the
at
state.
Providing education for all our kids? That is,
I think
that
we,
is our teachers are so
I think
different.
We can meet the requirement of the law without this level of detail. And I'm all for restraint when it comes to especially young children. So, I just don't think we need this data. That's my thought.
All right, let's see.
Hopeless.
The Let me ask, is there... Did we get a copy of this rule? It's not a rule, right? Is it? So it's not a rule, it's...
So are you asking for, within your materials, you should have a kind of a summary or a grouping of the statutory requirements, kind of by category rather than sequentially. It's a little easier to read.
Just as a refresher, though, we brought this to you because the rule actually said that the board had to approve this collection. It's a little unusual.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just approving this collection for us to be able to meet statutory requirements.
And again, as Dr. Anthus points out, this CAP4K was passed in 2008. It preceded our reporting system as a state, and so this was kind of asking for this reporting system to be approved by the board. I think that kind of gives a little bit of reason of like why it feels a little unusual to be addressing this.
Okay. All right. Does anybody object to just laying this over till tomorrow for action only, and we'll try and not to have a great deal of discussion. Give us a chance to everybody sit down and read this, suggest modifications if we can put them together by tomorrow, and let's see if we can move forward then.
One more question.
Yes.
What's the burden on districts? What's the greater burden on districts?
So when you say the greater burden...
I mean, we already have the system.
Right.
Will districts have this number? So is it just a matter of write it down?
Yeah, districts will have this information. I don't think there'd be a district out there that would say, oh, we're really glad to be able to provide even more information. I mean, I have no illusion about that. EDAC's role is to help us be able to implement statute in the way that has the least burden on districts, and they provide us advice around that. And so what we propose is kind of based on kind of a back and forth between questions that the board has, bringing those to EDAC to get some advice back. And so so what you have here is what EDAC says is the least burden.
So teachers, kindergarten teachers, have the not the laptop, but whatever device they use. They collect the information. They push a button, and you get an average score for each item. Do they send it to the principal?
So
I'm trying to figure out
kind of how it works a little bit.
What's the process? Mm-hmm. And so in order to maybe minimize the burden or not.
Right. So the way that the system would work is that whatever tool it is that teachers are using, it would kind of store all that information in their recording system. Principals can look at that data through, you know, kind of an account I'm trying to think of what it's called. What's that called? Someone said a word, and I was hoping it was the right word. But
so this is all on tablets, right?
Right. Okay. Right. So online, they can look. Yeah, they have particular permissions to look at data, and district level has the opportunity to kind of take that information. What they would typically do is districts have kind of a student information system that they use, whether it's Alpine or Infinite Campus. Some of these might sound a little familiar to you. What they typically do is kind of use that as the interface between all of the multiple programs they use and communication with parents, and they extract information from that to send to the department. So I don't know that that really answers your question necessarily.
I want to know, does somebody have to come in with a pencil and paper, or can they extract it from the tablets and whoosh?
So through the district student information system, they can set up so that they can download just the particular things that are needed. So in this case, it would be these areas. They would kind of download just that information, and they would be able to put that in their student information system and send that to the state. So they have control over what it is that they pull from their student information system.
Thank you.
All right, tomorrow. I think we'll be action only tomorrow, and we'll have to figure out some sort of agenda and way to handle it. I think the items we have left, I believe we're going to try and lay over. And I apologize for not keeping us on schedule. Item 17, which are the revisions to the READ Act, we did not finish. So that we'll try and lay over till tomorrow. And I'm trying to remember if that was contentious or not.
Oh, yeah.
Items 1902, school districts and performance framework and target setting. Do we get that?
We did not, Mr. Chair, but I talked to Alyssa and she said it's not in an urgent item, so we could just lay that over to February.
All right, let's do that.
February's agenda.
And then
1902.
And then item 20, we do need to do, and so we will allocate some time for item 20.
Okay.
And if you can help me kind of a revised agenda, and we'll get some talking points and see where we are. So, at any rate, thank you all for a long day. And tomorrow we have some extra events with the State of the State message. And I can't remember what else we have, but
we have a charter school hearing.
Charter school hearing. We definitely have to be on time for that. So we'll stand and we'll be adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.